Chapter 33. Birthday.
Jen, salutations from your former master. I do not expect anything other than hatred and loathing at word from me, but I thought I should attempt to barter some truce with you, for you and I will be face to face soon. From the tales I've heard of you, and from my own knowledge of your character, I think it likely that you will challenge me to a duel when I arrive. I am sure you seek to find justice for the wrongs I committed against you and against the woman you loved while I wintered in your town. I will not apologize for what I have done, for you would certainly perceive it as disingenuous. I will not explain why I did what I did, for you would not understand it. I will not try to offer any recompense for what life, love, or prosperity you lost at my hand, for I am sure that nothing I could tender for restitution would satisfy, and thus I am left only with the power of argument to convince you that you must not challenge me when I arrive, but instead you must put aside your vengeance for what I hope you will see is best for not only you and me, but for those with whom we are intertwined. Before such arguments, I will say that I was impressed by your victory over Cormyth. Cormyth, before you, was my masterwork, and while he was certainly a better-built fighter than you, it seems you have a double portion of intelligence and quickness that lent you the victory. Truly, I would like nothing better than to fight you to see just how far you could push me, but I will set aside my desire to be tested if you will put aside your desire to destroy me. You must understand that whatever I took from you, you have me to thank for everything you are. You are now of noble class. You are a protector of the Shalane. You are in the personal acquaintance of the First Mother of Rugoth. You are a legend. You have honor and position and power that most men of your previous station cannot grasp even in the most greedy and ambitious of their dreams. If not for my instruction, however cruel, you would be a second-rate bard in a scabby town watching Regina wither at Hubert's side. You may argue that I did not intend any of the good consequences and rewards that my training has since afforded you, and I cannot contradict the argument, but even one as evil as you must think me to be believes that fate pushes us together and pulls us apart in ways and for purposes we do not intend. And while what you once valued and loved was ripped away, what has replaced it is tenfold greater, greater not only for you, but for the Shalane and for the purposes of prophecy. My son and the Shalane now face a dangerous journey, and while I had not intended to travel with them, your emergence has taught me better. You and I are creatures fashioned for times as these, and it is time I put myself to the best service I can lend my skills to. If you will put aside your hate, those you now cherish will have my sword and my knowledge as well as yours. Out of respect for your previous losses and as a demonstration of my goodwill, I will protect whom you tell me to protect, and kill any you call enemy. Before us none can stand, Jen. Let us stand together. Just as I have broken your nation and welded it to mine to add strength where division subtracted, I broke you, and would now add your strength to mine that we may most effectively accomplish the most important of purposes. You do not have to like my methods or me, but you do need to see reason. Remember what was taught in your training. Even enemies must unite against the strength of a common foe, and so must we do. I will arrive in Mikmir for the celebration of Shatan's and the Shalane's birthdays. I do not expect a reply, but I will be prepared for whatever you choose. Vengeance and death, or alliance and strength. The matter is yours to decide. Torbrand Cairn, Shadan of Ogmir, and King of Tolnor. P.S. I would like the return of the stones and the knowledge of how you escaped them, though I doubt you will feel inclined to surrender either. P.P.S. I, of course, hold you blameless in crossing my son. If Caimas tells the truth, he has been nothing but an embarrassment. I believe I shall force him to drop the name of Cairn and go by his prophetic title instead.
Jen folded the letter and threw it on the floor next to his bed. It was the third time he had read through Shadan Cairn's pointed message in the hours after the night watch ended with the Shalane. The letter had come a month before, and despite his resolve to ignore Torbrand and remain in the Shalane's service, the words of his captor and trainer dragged back to the stage of his mind scenes he had fought hard to dismiss and silence. When he finally saw the Shadan today, he wanted to be poised and calm, but he knew full well that seeing the face that had tormented him day after day might break whatever resolutions he had formed in its absence. He told no one of the letter, not even Fenner, who had left 2 weeks earlier to spend time with her family before leaving with the Shalane on the journey to the Shroud Lake Shard and Elder Lurimora. Jen wished she were with him. Her brightness and affection revived him from his somber moods, and her presence would remind him why he wanted to cling to life and not risk it on vengeance. Gant, Ural, and the Morwals left a week after Gant and Ural's wedding. Jen enjoyed their association, though he had seen them little on account of his duties. The wedding the First Mother had thrown for them stunned them both, and the gifts of clothes, furniture, and money would provide them a living more comfortable than anything they could have expected. The Morwals were similarly cared for. Seeing the happiness and anticipation in their eyes as they rolled south gave Jen peace. But Shadan Cairn's letter arrived a few days later, ruining his contentment. Thinking of Fenner and his friends was all he had today to serve as support. Torbrand had arrived the night before and would attend the birthday party for his son and the Shalane, along with scores of warlords from Ogmyr, aristocrats from Rugarth, and two dukes from Tolnor. When the announcement of the party had come, Jen had hoped he would be blissfully excluded from the affair since Regent Ogbith insisted that it occur during the day, but the Shalane had extended a personal invitation to him, and he could not decline. Exhaling, he stood and donned his black dress uniform, buckling his sword and trying to forget who had taught him to use it. He grabbed the present he had fashioned for the Shalane from on top of the stack of books at his bedside, and after stuffing it in his coat pocket, went into the hall. Jaren stood outside the Shalane's door. She was late for her own birthday party. "Is the Shalane coming soon?" Jen inquired of his counterpart. "Her stomach gave her trouble earlier," Jaren explained, "but I believe she is over it now. I think it a matter of clothing at this point." Jen nodded. "I felt the illness in her earlier as well. A case of nerves, I think. I'll see you soon, then." Jen navigated the maze, finding the First Mother leaning against the wall on the other side. No matter how often he saw her, her beauty always prompted a feeling of surprise, and today she had obviously put effort into being beautiful. The red gown she wore was one intended for a relaxed celebration, rather than formality or regality. Cadean, who stood a short distance away, would need a sharp eye today. Jen had to use all his control to not gawk like a dumbstruck fool. Jen bowed. "Your Grace?" "Well, if it isn't the young Lord Blackshear," she nodded, eyes playful. "It is good to see you. I see that you find me rather ravishing."
"What makes you say that?"
Jen asked, fearful he had betrayed something of what he thought.
"Because if you don't, I think I might cry." "What do you think?"
she asked, executing a twirl. "Is the neck too low?"
"Being a decent sort of man, I didn't notice."
"Then it isn't,"
Mirel frowned.
"I assure you, Your Grace," Jen consoled her, smiling, "that you are more than stunning, and I may need to stick close to Cadean to help him beat away your slobbering admirers."
"That is more like it," she said. "I was beginning to think my efforts had failed entirely."
"Is there a motive behind your efforts, or are you just trying to make life difficult for Cadean? I'm sure he must have a lot of worries already."
"My motives are my own, though I hardly need one."
"Of course, my lady," Jen replied, inclining his head. "I apologize for the intrusion. If you're waiting for your daughter, she is still readying herself. She felt ill earlier, but I'm made to understand that she is currently selecting suitable attire."
"Thank you for the news. I did not know she was feeling unwell.
However, I was loitering around waiting for you. The party is underway, and I found myself in need of an escort.
Cadean, if you could leave us. I need to speak with Jen alone. Meet me in the Great Hall, or you can get some sleep. I will have Jen watch over me in the interim."
Cadean frowned.
"As you wish, my lady," he said, bowing stiffly and walking back toward the Great Hall.
"Well?"
the First Mother said expectantly. Jen swallowed hard and stepped forward, extending his arm. The First Mother took it and pulled him in close, talking in a whisper as they walked slowly by the sentries. She smelled intoxicatingly of some distracting scent he couldn't quite place, and her softness and warmth were quite unnerving.
"My motive, you should know, is to get my way. I find aristocrats and noblemen much more pliable when I dress to woo rather than to rule. and I need you to frighten those I cannot make pliant by my feminine gifts. There are some important matters to settle at this little party. A rather utilitarian use of your beauty, and my ugliness. You are intimidating, not ugly. And since I am not permitted to love until my daughter weds and is with child, my beauty serves little other purpose than manipulating squabbling regents and abstinent churchmen. Fortunately, my restriction will be lifted before the year is out, if all goes well. Perhaps I should start flirting with some eligible men. If I play things right, I can wed and have a man for my bed the day after my daughter announces the blessed conception of her holy child. I'm sure you will have little difficulty finding a man who worships you, Mirel. Thank you. I fear I shall botch any attempts at romance, since I have only played at it for political purposes. Instead of asking for a kiss, I'll probably slip into old habits and ask for a boundary change, or a tax increase.
I wouldn't worry, Highness. Coming from you, most men would find talk of seed corn terribly enthralling. However, Jen said, trying to change the subject, I'm sure that you didn't wish to speak with me about finding a potential consort. I take it you just want me to walk with you and act menacing.
More or less. While you accompany me today, be all smiles and address me by name, not title. When I address one of the nobles or aristocrats in a matter of business, stand close at my side and turn unhappy every time they disagree with me.
What if I disagree with you?
Then I shall have to turn my wooing arts on you, though it might take a concentrated, prolonged effort to affect one as stubborn as yourself.
Jen didn't know how to answer and settled on a non-committal grunt.
But what concerns me, she continued, is a particular decision and a particular person I must convince.
Who?
Torbrand Cairn. I'm sorry to cause you pain by speaking of him, but you will see him whenever he decides to grace the party with his presence. I know he hurt you, and you have every reason to seek his life. I need to know what your intentions are.
I will not raise a challenge, Jen said. We must ally ourselves to the same purpose for now. We need him on the journey.
I hoped you would say that. I am much relieved.
What is the decision that involves him?
When we were in Ogmir, Torbrand stated his intention not to accompany his son on the journey to Elder Lurimora, much to the disappointment of Ogmerians. His absence, however, permitted Regent Ogbith to take leadership of the caravan. Cairn wrote me a month ago and informed me of his change of heart, going on and on about his new desire to serve the prophecy. I hope he didn't expect me to believe any of his babbling. In that same letter he stated his intention to take command, as is his right as father of the Ha'ulric and Shadan of Ogmir. He was gracious enough to permit Regent Ogbith to serve as his second. I want to change his mind today. If it will cause you difficulty to be near him, I will understand and go it alone.
I will stand with you, First Mother.
Excellent. With my beauty and your reputation, we will make short work of the room and have ample time for other entertainments. I thank you, and hope you do not feel ill-used. Did you bring a present for my daughter?
I did.
It must be small. What is it?
You will have to wait and see. I doubt I will give it to her at the presentation. It is a poor gift compared to those I saw being dragged in yesterday. I don't have my income from Blackshire yet.
Mirel squeezed his arm. Ah, you should have told me, Jen. I would have set you up with a nice sum. But don't worry too much. The gift-giving is really a contest for the nobles to see who can outdo the other. It's actually quite annoying. By the way, when is your birthday?
I have no idea.
You don't even know how old you are?
Not precisely. I'm around the same age as your daughter, give or take a year or two. When they arrived at the doors of the great hall, the party was in full gallop, a happy roar of music, laughter and talk echoing into the hallway. Chamberlain Herney introduced them grandly. Jen took the time to assess the room, noticing the padres, Aethon included, skulking about the fringes of the assembly, keeping to themselves. Both Ethrys and Caimas were absent, having left some days earlier, apparently in each other's company, which surprised Jen. Their manner toward each other had always seemed cold.
"You have more titles than I do," Mirel observed as they walked inside to a great deal of bowing.
Shatan sat at a table against the wall, mug in hand. He looked nervous and out of sorts, and Jen wondered if his yet absent father had anything to do with it.
Cadean fell in behind them as soon as the First Mother entered the room, and Jen felt grateful for his presence. Several men in the crowd gaped at Mirel with naked passion on their faces, and Jen employed his first few moments at the festivities, shooting warning glances back. To his delight, his disturbing countenance and fierce glare proved more than adequate to discourage the lusty celebrants.
"I shall have to bring you along more often, Lord Blackshire," Mirel commented after a few minutes. "Now that the world knows I can take a consort soon, I've spent a great deal of time at these kinds of occasions fending off those hungry for power, my passion, or both. With you, it appears I shall be left blissfully alone."
"Inform me if there is a potential consort out there I should refrain from scaring away."
"Scare them all."
After they greeted several of the regency from Rugarth and warlords from Ogmir, the Chamberlain's voice rose again.
"May I present the most holy Shalane, Mother of God, future High Queen of the World, the Healer."
All music and talking stopped as the congregation genuflected at her entry.
"Rise and continue," she said,
and Jen noted the slight tension in her voice and wondered what was worrying her. She approached her mother quickly. She wore blue, the first time Jen had seen her in a colour other than white at a public presentation.
"Mother, Jen, it is good to see you both."
"And you, Shalane. Look who I caught for an escort," the First Mother said, pulling Jen in tight. "Shall I make him dance with me?
I need to borrow him for a moment if I could."
"I think you should pay your respects to your fiancée first," the First Mother admonished, "or I think he will become upset and perhaps get drunk and loud rather sooner than usual. Kaimas left 4 days ago, and I fear he is already slipping into old habits."
"Yes, yes," the Shalane said distractedly. "You are right. I fear I may be too late. I will return as quickly as possible. It is important."
She walked away only to be thronged by a horde of admirers, and before long Mirel and Jen found themselves entrenched in a spate of visits that required the same mechanical and polite conversation repeatedly. Mirel handled it deftly, managing to sound fresh at each new encounter, while Jen found the words, "thank you," coming out more gratingly each time someone would compliment him for his work. The First Mother did manage to take care of one of her items, denial of an annexation of property, during the brief visits. A halt in the music and a call for silence gave them a welcome distraction from their conversations.
"First Mother, gentlemen and gentlewomen," the court bard said grandly, "it is with great pleasure that I present the Ha'ulric and the Shalane who will dance to the Swallow's Wade for the court."
Jen knew the song and how to dance it. It was a tune for the young and in love, energetic and romantic.
"Interesting. Another one of Shaitan's stunts to prove his love?" Jen asked as the Shalane and Shaitan took the floor.
"I arranged it," Mirel admitted.
"Really? Your daughter will no doubt have words for you afterward."
"Perhaps, but I hope she understands why," the First Mother whispered in his ear. "It is starting to get around, and I mean everywhere, that the two dislike and ignore each other, so I'm hoping this will help settle the rumours. Well, the truth, a little bit. The rift between them will hurt the morale of the people, at least in Rugarth and Tolnor. Besides, I didn't teach her to dance for nothing."
Jen nodded his understanding, amazed at Mirel's ability to deal with so many issues at once. The dance went by slowly, to Jen's reckoning. Shaitan danced ably, though he looked a little ridiculous doing it, but the Shalane performed each move perfunctorily and with no pleasure. Jen riveted his stare on Shaitan, hoping to remind him to behave, but even dancing with the most beautiful woman ever born could not wipe away the concern Jen had noticed on the Ha'ulric's face earlier. A weight pressed upon Shaitan, and Jen thought the sober result a definite improvement upon his character. The dance ended to polite clapping, and after a formal bow, the two went separate ways. Mirel bit her lip, face concerned.
"I doubt that helped to lay any fears," she commented quietly.
Jen nodded his agreement. The talk in the room had barely started afresh when again the court bard called for attention.
"It is my great honour to announce that the Shalane has requested her mother and her escort perform a dance for us of her choosing."
Jen groaned inwardly and Mirel laughed. The assembly clapped and shouted their approval.
"There's a good girl,"
Mirel whispered, leading Jen toward the centre of the floor.
"At last she has learned that turnabout is fair play. You know the Swallow's Way, don't you?
Of course, but...
Good. We need to show them how it is done.
And show them they did. Jen had never danced with a partner as capable or enthusiastic as the first mother of Rugarth, and while he felt reluctant at first, Mirelle's energy drew him into the dance. Nothing existed save her and the rhythm, and when the music stopped, the crowd applauded thunderously, the padres excepting. The first mother gripped his hand and they both bowed as performers would, after which Mirelle hugged him and kissed him on the cheek.
"She favours him overmuch," Chatan complained nearby. "She hasn't danced with me at all, and I'm her future son-in-law."
"That will give them something else to talk about," the first mother said as they walked arm in arm from the floor. The Shalane caught up with them quickly. "I need to speak with him, mother. We will discuss my dance partners later."
The Shalane came to Jen's side and took his arm. Jen realized he'd just left the company of the second most beautiful woman for the company of the first, and started to feel extraordinarily fortunate. He thought the Shalane would comment on the dance, but instead she directed him up the stairs to the balcony, where fewer people loitered about. Aethan watched them, face displeased. The doors to the outside balconies were open, the air refreshing and brisk, as was often the case in the spring, where the sun shone, was warm, and where it did not, was chill.
"Jen," the Shalane said, voice worried, "we will see Shadan Cairn today. How can I face him? I saw what he did to you and to Regina. How can I not hate him for your sake? And what will you do? Please do not fight him. I know it is hypocritical to ask it, but no good can come from it."
"I will not fight him, Shalane," Jen answered calmingly. "We will need his sword and his experience. I will forbear my own desire for justice for the good of us all."
"Thank you, Jen," the Shalane said, squeezing his arm. "I have worried so.
As for facing your future father-in-law, just do the bare minimum to satisfy propriety, which isn't much in this case. Just approach him as you did the dance with Chatan." The Shalane nodded.
"I did poorly, then?"
"Far be it from me to tell the holy Shalane she danced badly. I will say, rather, that you did exactly what was needed to finish the task, and no more."
"My mother certainly did more than what was needed to finish the task. I suppose she was a bit more fortunate in her partner than I."
"Her partner had little to do with it. She is a spirited dancer." The Shalane replied with a dissatisfied humph and pulled Jen back toward the stairs.
"So why blue?" Jen asked as they descended. "Birthdays need colour. I'm not required to be her white-clad holiness today. When is your birthday?"
"I have no idea."
"Oh, come now, what day did you celebrate on?"
"Commoners in Tol Nor don't celebrate birthdays. All this fuss, bother and hoard exchange is a game for nobility."
"And you are now nobility," the Shalane said. "So welcome to our little game. We shall have to declare a proper birthday for you."
"You and your mother can work one out. She asked about it as well. But on the subject of presents, I caught a glimpse of some of the ones the servants stored yesterday. I think there is a statue in there somewhere."
"Another one?" the Shalane asked unhappily.
"You have some already?"
"Yes. There's a whole room full of them somewhere in the castle. All of them depict me unveiled, fantasies of the artists, so they were deemed inappropriate to put in the garden or in the square. Most are based on my mother."
"I would like to see them. Do any of them look like you?"
"Not really."
"Can I have one? My room needs decoration."
"No."
The music and talking stopped, as the Chamberlain banged his staff on the floor again.
"May I present Torbrand Cairn, Shadan of Ogmir and King of Tol Nor, father of the Haulric, master swordsman."
Jen's back stiffened. Torbrand strode confidently through the doors, in appearance much the same as he was the day he emerged from Bernard Scholes's house, tall, confident, and commanding. He wore all black, save for red trim on his coat and pants. His sword in scabbard, etched indelibly in Jen's mind, hung at his side, and his eyes darted around the crowd. At last they fell on Jen. Jen met his former master's eye, concentrating on controlling his thoughts and reactions. Cairn ignored the still silent crowd and walked forward, a grin on his face. No one spoke. Jen wondered how much information about the nature of his training was known to those besides the Shalane and her inner circle.
Jaren rushed toward them and urged a reluctant Shalane to follow him.
"Find me after," she said after acquiescing to Jaren's demand and Jen's insistence.
Jen nodded and tried to relax, knowing Shadan Cairn would sense his tension and see it as weakness.
"So, Jen," Torbran said, hands on hips, studying Jen from top to bottom. "I must say you cleaned up well. You look fit. Shall I take the Shalane's departure as a sign that we are to fight? Or have you seen reason and are being overly cautious?"
"There will be no fighting," the crowd visibly relaxed. "There is more important work to do, and you will help me do it."
"Of course I will. But I've been wondering something."
Torbran's hand darted for his sword hilt, and Jen drew his own in an instant. The nobles gasped at the display of steel, and the Dark Guard scrambled into a protective position around the Shalane. Torbran laughed heartily and resheathed his sword. Jen followed suit, feeling foolish.
"You are still fast. Wonderful," Torbran effused. "My apologies to the First Mother if I have offended her court. It was merely a test for my student. Where is Shatan?"
The people parted to reveal the Shadan's son, who had turned a sickly pale colour from drink, fear, or both. He turned even whiter on seeing his father. Torbran strode forward until he stood in front of him, examining him for several long moments in much the same way he had Jen. Shatan stood as straight as he could, but he had difficulty meeting his father's eye.
"Shalane," Torbran said, turning back to find her in the crowd. "I am truly sorry. If you'd like, I'll burn a black circle above Jen's eye, and you can marry him. Why is it so quiet in here? I thought this was a party."
The musicians began haltingly as Torbran went in search of food and conversation with his warlords, affronting Rugothian aristocracy by his complete disregard for the First Mother. Shatan exhaled, angry but relieved.
"Thank you again for your forbearance," Mirel said, taking Jen's arm. "Insufferable man. Thus you see how men who fear nothing behave."
"I'm sorry," Jen said, "for drawing my blade again in your court."
"No apology needed. Torbran is capricious, and I don't fault you for defending yourself from his feint. Are you ready for me to own you for the next couple of hours?"
"The Shalane wished for me to find her after talking with Lord Cairn."
"She can wait. Remember, address me as Mirel, and try to relax. Except when they disagree with me, of course."